This is Fresh Air. Bluegrass fans sometimes get worked into a snit when they hear Tony Trischka. He violates all the conventions of the form, with gusto. His sometimes loopy solos borrow from jazz, rock, and the avant-garde. Trischka has always tried to push the banjo forward, but his new album, World Turning, takes inspiration from the past. It features his interpretations of banjo music from the last two centuries, as well as original music inspired by historical styles. Here's an original called Benko's Rag, his tribute to banjo rags of the 1920s and 30s. Most of the songs on Trischka's new album are based on banjo styles that evolved in America. But Trischka opens his album with his arrangement of a tune from Senegal. The banjo's roots are in Africa.
It started in Africa, really, and even in certain parts of the Middle East. But when the slaves were taken to the Americas in the 1600s, they brought with them gourd instruments with necks on them with 3 and 4 strings. And these were the early banjos. They were called sometimes banzas or banjos, or in the West Indies they were called merrywangs, which I think is an appropriate name. And so I wanted to start in Africa, where the banjo has its roots.
I want to play Alpha Yaya from the album. Could you describe what you're doing in the way that you're strumming on this?
Basically, I'm just finger picking. This is my take on what the banjo, or not the banjo, but the Hollum player, the African player, was doing on his instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a different instrument. It's not just a banjo, but I transcribed note for note what he was playing for the introduction and for the first few solos. And then from there it gets a little more modernized. But the basic sound I was going for was that African sound. And it's a song about a king who I've talked to a couple of other people about it, and he was a very famous king in Western Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of guys from REM on here and Sid Straw. So it has a little more of a modern sound in terms of the vocal approach, because it was done originally as a solo.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear it. And this is Alpha Yaya. That's Tony Trischka from his new album, which is called World Turning. You do a couple of minstrel tunes on your new album, and you refer to something called the Briggs Banjo Instructor, which you say was considered to be the very first banjo instruction book dating back to 1855. Do you actually have a copy of the book?
I do. I got a copy in Xerox form, and since then it's been reprinted, but it's sort of like finding the Holy Grail or something. Because I was aware of what was going on at the turn of the century, but then they have something that they've had every 2 years called the Tennessee Banjo Institute down in Lebanon, Tennessee, and they get 300 or 400 banjo players together at one time, which is a frightening prospect for some people. But anyway, it was there that I first heard this minstrel style of banjo playing, and the banjos that they used back in the mid-1800s were these low-tuned banjos, much lower tuning, and of course they had gut strings or sometimes wound horsehair. And it's a much funkier sound. And the banjos were fretless. And I fell in love with the sound. And I was told that there's this Briggs banjo instructor that taught the style in 1855. And anyway, so I got a hold of it and taught myself how to play from the book. So even 150-some-odd years later, it still works.
Well, what was the place of minstrel shows in bringing the banjo into white music? You know, because banjo starts off as an instrument related to Africa, now it's associated with a very white form of music, bluegrass.
Right. Well, the minstrel style was really kind of that bridge. In the Briggs book, Thomas Briggs talks about how he went to the plantations and learned from the Negroes, as he called them. And that's basically, he took that sound and did something to it. It's kind of impossible to say. Unfortunately, there's no actual record of what the slaves were playing, at least on the banjo. But the banjo, actually, even before the minstrel shows, was found in the circus P.T. Barnum actually had it in his circus in the 1840s, and the banjo player would stand on a board and tap pretty much just the downbeat with the back of his foot and would play in this style. And anyway, it grew from there into this minstrel sound where they added tambourine, bones, which originally, when the slaves played the bones, they actually were animal bones, but later became pieces of wood, and fiddle. And it became, it actually had some roots in England too, but there was a lot of comedy that was done. There were skits done about old Dan Tucker and the devil and things like that. And there was a lot of humor. And, of course, the musicians were in blackface and trying to do, I guess you would say, a parody on the slaves. And there were various stereotypes, like Jim Crow would be the plantation slave. And then there would be just various other stereotypes that would be done for entertainment for the whites, because it was a very exotic sort of thing up north to see what the plantation slaves were doing.
But there's some interesting music that got spread around through this odd tradition.
Exactly. And if you can disassociate the music from the politics of the situation, I guess, there is some very beautiful music that's that came out of the style. And it was really the first commercial use of the banjo was in these minstrel shows.
Mm-hmm. Now, update the style a little bit. What happens between the minstrel style and bluegrass?
Well, a number of things happened. There was a turn-of-the-century style, which became called the classic style, which was a three-finger style that sort of came in the 1860s, but really became very popular at the turn of the centuries, turn of the century, I should say. And in this case, they were trying to get away from the minstrel show. It seemed like too crude an entertainment. And so the banjoists would dress up in tuxedos and play with orchestras and or piano players, and they could actually read music. And there's some of the very first Edison cylinders featured banjo music right at the very turn of the century. And so it was a much more refined kind of a music playing, light classical music, marches and rags and things like that.
Musician Tony Trischka is my guest. His new album is called World Turning. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Back with banjo player Tony Trischka. Since so much of your playing has been about expanding beyond bluegrass by going forward or going backwards, do something with like a very basic bluegrass sound for us and tell us what that style is like.
Okay. I'm going to do a song that was the first tune that Earl Scruggs ever played in the three-finger style. And I talked to him a couple of years ago, and he said, you know, Tony, it was like in the movies. I was playing in the two-finger style, and then suddenly that third finger came in there. And this is a tune called Reuben's Train, and this is basically the bluegrass style.
Is that the very first style that you learned?
I started with bluegrass, really, yes, in about 1963. And that just got me started. I just loved that sound.
Bluegrass is a very southern style of playing. You grew up in Syracuse, New York, which is in upstate New York.
Right.
So clearly you were like geographically far away from the roots of bluegrass. Did you feel emotionally connected to the music?
I felt very emotionally, and I still do. Especially listening to the older recordings by Flatt & Scruggs or Bill Monroe, people like that, that were the guys that started it, the first generation bluegrassers. It's hard to explain why that is, but you can go anywhere in the world and find bluegrass fans. I'm probably going to be going to New Zealand in February with Bela Fleck. We're going to do a duet tour there. And there are fans over there, and there are fans in Japan and all over Europe. And there's something about the music that bespeaks an earlier time and maybe a simpler lifestyle or whatever, and there is a very strong emotion to it. And it doesn't matter. I mean, my father was a physics professor, and I grew up again up in the north, and yet there's something about it that really resonated with me.
Now, what got you experimenting with the banjo? Why weren't you content with playing straight bluegrass?
Well, like I say, I guess some of these other influences I was hearing, it was just a very natural thing. I wasn't trying to destroy bluegrass, you know, in my own little way or anything like that, because it was it was and still is at the root of a lot of what I do. And I don't know. I think there's some sort of predisposition that goes beyond even influences. I was just born to be a banjo player, and in that also to stretch the boundaries, just something in my personality that wanted to do that. In fact, I think the very first day I picked up the banjo, I noodled on the melody to Ode to Joy, Beethoven's famous Ode to Joy, and picked that out rather than playing bluegrass. So right immediately I was trying to do different things with the instrument. I wasn't thinking, well, you can't do this because it's a bluegrass instrument, or don't try that, that's not folk music. You know, I didn't have the idea of boundaries.
Have you gotten a lot of resistance from bluegrass audiences, resistance to your experimentation?
Oh, at times, sure. I've had certain less than charitable reviews in some of the publications. It's eased up a little bit in more recent years. I put out a bluegrass record in about 1984, 85, called Hill Country. I wrote most of the tunes, but I tried to do a very traditionally oriented record, and since then I think it's eased up a little bit, because I can say, well, look, I like it, I love bluegrass, here's this. And then after that I could go out and do anything wacky I wanted. So, like, on this new record I have a song with the Violent Femmes, but I think I was validated because of this other record. But yeah, I've had people get actually very angry with me, saying, we came to see you and it said bluegrass and you're playing jazz. And so, you know, even after all these years, there's people get their dander up about it.
Why don't we hear Down in the Cider House, featuring you and the Violent Femmes, from your new album, World Turning. Tony Trischka on banjo. When people say that you're violating the traditions of bluegrass, does that strike you as a little odd? Because, I mean, you've gone so far back in banjo history that, you know, bluegrass is just another period. It's not the beginning and it's not the end of banjo playing.
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, the record just came out a few months ago, so I haven't fully felt the effects of that yet. But if people say, well, you're not playing traditional bluegrass, I can say, look, I'm going 100 years before bluegrass.
Yes,
you know, you can't get a whole lot more traditional than that. And bluegrass in itself was a fusion of jazz and Scotch-Irish fiddling and blues. And so that's a point to be made. Earl Scruggs was taking Glenn Miller licks and putting it on the banjo, and so on and so forth. Bill Monroe recorded with electric guitar in the 50s. And so there is a... there's a tradition in bluegrass of, you know, it is a fusion music in itself, but people like to treat it as a museum piece in some ways. And what Bill Monroe did with Flat and Scruggs in 1945, which is the original bluegrass band, that's what they hold up as bluegrass. And you know, if you get too far away from that formula, then it's, then you've got problems.
Tony Trischka's new album is called World Turning. Thank you. This is Fresh Air.